good morning and welcome everyone to Live Dharma Sunday for August 28th, 2011. And as always, our broadcast is sponsored by the Bright Dawn Institute. And if you don't know about our website at brightdawn.org, please visit it. I'm your host, Reverend Koyo Kobose. So glad that you've all joined us. Even those on the East Coast, or Hurricane Irene, reminding us that Mother Nature is reminding us that we're not in charge. And, because of the CNN and all the national news, 24 hours, everybody across the nation can get graphic update reports of what's going on and really get to sort of experience, you know, the reality of the news. So many people that are living on the East Coast get affected, and Adrian's sister and brother-in-law were visiting in California, and they live in New York. They were driving back, and they had to adjust their plans, not return right away. And I think people are bracing for any kind of emergency, power outages, and so forth. Yet this year, well, even right now, there's a out-of-control fire near the west entrance of Yosemite. So our local news, those kinds of things are happening. And then I remember this past summer in Chicago area in the suburbs, they had a big power outage that lasted quite a while. These things are all really affect us, utilities, and disrupt ourselves. It's sort of like Mother Nature hits a pause button and it stops our routines, you know. And we can't help but be affected and pay attention to it. Well, we have a guest, and Michael Shinyo Lawrence of Canyon, Texas. He was part of our Lay Minister 3 group, and he's a Bright Dawn lay minister and working in a counseling capacity, I believe, in the prison system. It must be very interesting, to say the least, work situation and experiences. So, Michael Shinyo Sensei?
Yes, Sensei.
Okay, you're on.
Okay. I want to talk today about a phrase that we hear a lot from Reverend Koyo, and it's keep going. The Heart Sutra is probably one of the most popular sutras in American Buddhism. There's a mantra in the sutra that says something like, go, go, go beyond, thoroughly go beyond, be founded in enlightenment. This mantra can sum up the Heart Sutra just as Koyo Sensei's famous saying, keep going. I've been taking Aikido classes for a little over a month now. According to Carl Geis, the fundamental precept of Aikido is to learn to deal with the world naturally and automatically in all things, thereby leaving our conscious mind free. A common phrase I hear in class is keep moving. For me, Aikido is a form of moving meditation. In this particular style, we even have a walking kata, which I use at home as a walking meditation. In Aikido and everyday spirituality, it is important to keep going or keep moving. But what does this mean? Close your eyes for a moment and imagine a stream that you've visited before. Remember the plants growing near the stream. Think of the life you saw, like fish, birds, deer, insects. Remember the sounds of moving water passing over rocks in its path. You see the sun glistening on the ripples? Was your attention drawn to a leaf floating downstream? In our minds, we may all have different streams, but where does the water come from and where does it go? The stream symbolizes the keep going attitude. If the stream does not move, the water becomes stagnant. Life in the stream may not survive in the stagnant water. Life near the stream will not want to drink from it. The light you saw reflecting on the ripples is the light of wisdom that can be found in nature. The floating leaf teaches us to go with the flow and keep moving. Whatever your spiritual practices are, whatever you're studying, don't become stagnant. Don't get caught up in your own conclusions. Remember that all things change and keep going as if every moment is completely new. I learned a lesson from Little Tree in the Canyon. I must find my center if I'm to keep going in the right direction. Lately, I've been all over the place. I want to keep going, but I found myself trying to go in too many directions. I need to narrow my path. I can easily narrow my path if I move from my center. This also, something I've learned in my keto is that you must move from your center. The canyon is a great place for me to go to get spiritually recharged and focused. Thank you, Little Tree. Keep going. Move from the center. Thank you.
Thank you. As I listen to the Dharma Glimpse, you know, a lot of the lay ministers, I didn't plan it, but they pick up on this, keep going, and I didn't know I'm emphasizing it, but I guess I say it a lot, become one of my code phrases or turning words in my spiritual journey. And that keep going phrase keeps going for me too. It keeps getting deeper, wider, and more associations, I guess. And you know, the more associations you get to something, the wider perspective you get. I mean, let's say you take anything, and there's all kind of ways to look at it, all kind of interpretations, all kind of applications, you know. It gets deeper and deeper. And the more you really look at something, the more you realize that it's wide open, you know. Well, for example, concrete example, listening today, I never thought of keep going in as applied to Heart Sutra, but there it is. And I'm listening right now, and I do the Blog Talk Radio at my office desk here, and the books that we use in the lay ministry course, all the books in our curriculum are up on my bookshelf, and I just reach up and grab the Heart Sutra and take a look. I knew which line that Shinyo Sensei was talking about, though it was the last, that's the last line in the sutra. And indeed, yeah, that's right. It says go, going, going. Gyate, gyate, hara gyate, hara so gyate, bodhi so waka. Gyate, gyate, going, going, go beyond, go and complete. You know. Indeed, we know that sometimes we talk about ourselves. And just because we're not something enclosed in our skin, we're not a noun, we are a verb. I think the Buddha must have tried to talk about the self using a candle flame or using stream of water, river. You know, candle flame looks, it has a shape, but it's flickering, it's combustion, it's dynamic. And the stream is the same thing too. It has banks, it has, this is a river, you could, it's definite, huh? But at the same time, it's dynamic. Sometimes I've used the illustration of, well, hey, I want to know this river, yeah. And so you try to control it, and you get a pail of it, and you say, okay, now I want to bring this home, or I want to study it on the bank. You know, I got this from the river. But you don't have the river. You have a pail of water. Or even if we try to interact with the river, and then there's the famous saying, you can't step in the same river twice. And that means also not just the river, but ourselves too. Sometimes we forget and we think that we are stationary, unchanging, and dealing with a changing world. No, we're right in it. So we have to change our approach, our attitude about how we interact with the world we live in. If we use the stream analogy, it's nice because, indeed, the feeling or the notion of stagnant, you know, yeah, and in fact, one of our other lay ministers, I remember, talked about the middle path as the middle of the river. That's where it's the deepest and it flows the strongest. It's the purest place, you know, the cleanest and the where the water's moving, you know, not stagnant. And if we apply this to the way our mental functions are, and of course this is the same as beginner's mind, expert's mind, as Shunryu Suzuki, founder of the San Francisco Zen Center, in his book, Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind, you know, just that beginner's mind is a precious thing. And in the expert's mind, there's not many options. You think you know it. It's very limited. No. But the beginner's mind is wide open. That's a very good and interesting conceptualization. Because normally we think, oh, I've got to know something. And this is very seductive and very subtle sometimes. You know, when you feel, oh, I get accomplished. That's always in the dualistic sense of I and the subject and the object. And sometimes I think we have to appreciate that that kind of dualism is okay. It has its function and its purpose and its importance. Or you might want to stop the doing and we do another kind of doing of reflecting upon the doing. You know? And we say, hey. But then we shouldn't confuse that when we want to just let go, dive in, let it take over. And all artists, that is the ironic thing about keep going, say in life, but say it's particularly in sports or in the arts, these kind of activities lend themselves to losing ourselves in it. When we say lose ourselves, it means sometimes they say, well, you lose yourself to find yourself. But that's the reflection about this process. But it shows that we can let go and come back and say, hey, I let go. And that was good. I was hitting on all cylinders. I was in the flow. I was in the zone. You know, I had the rhythm. Okay. Yes, we could affirm it and then try to put ourselves into the positions where we could encourage that. We could provide more opportunities for ourselves and like that. We could see its values. We're not unconscious of it, you know? And therefore, we could maximize it, the opportunities for it. Okay. There might be, the other danger of, well, we're so reflecting upon it and its value that we find it difficult to let go because we always want to keep looking at it. Huh? But I think that experience itself is transformative enough and powerful enough, and that we become it enough that we can let go, you know, and experience something, let something take over. I was just reading an author talking about reflecting upon writing a novel, fictional novel, and he was saying, of all the novels he wrote, he was talking about, it was a preface to this particular novel, and he says, this one was the most that the characters took over. He says, all authors know the experience of having a fictional character take over, you know. And he said, that was very strong in this one, you know. And in one sense, maybe too logical sense, you might say, well, the character really doesn't take over, you know, because the author is writing it. He's doing it. Okay. So I'm talking about not about that, but about the experience of it. The living of it, one's life. You know, life is not a logical formula. You can't explain it away and put it into this context, and whether it's a scientific context or whatever it is, and say, that's it. Make big mistake. Huh? It has to be just lived, just as it is. And that kind of living experience, these authors, they experience that, and they say, and they go with it. Okay? And the book is writing itself, and the character becomes alive, and says, "Hey, nah." And sometimes it's more apparent when you say, "Well, I think I have a particular idea about how I want this scene to be and everything," and then all of a sudden the character says, "No, I don't want to. That's not me." No, and something new comes out, something creative comes out of one's, well, whatever you call it, subconscious, creative. What it is it's you but not you. All the karmic causes and conditions that, you know, you can't look at one life and not see the influence of a whole lot of other lives, and just a moment of reflection, we know that all the physical, social, psychological, everything that makes us who we are, we're that dynamic river, and we don't control that. Huh? And so that is coming out of the whole universe, in a sense. We're the wire, maybe, but we don't own the electricity. We're the particular appliance, light bulb. Well, when it lights up, you know, that flow is dynamic. We don't own that electricity. Huh? Sometimes I remember my father used to talk about universal life that manifests itself through individual life. That universal life, we might call it Amida. Some people might call it God. Some people might call it another power or the other force. May the force be with you, or anthropomorphize it, make it into a deity. Or even, I got an email from someone that I want to mention just before I forget. Today is Reverend Akegarasu, my father's teacher, his Memorial Day. He passed away in August 28th in 1954, I believe it was. And so I wanted to mention that. And by coincidence, if there is a coincidence, I got an email just yesterday from a Dharma friend who lives in California, and he said, Sensei, after reading the quote from Haya Akigatsu in your book, Bright Dawn, page 124, if you forgot, says in paren, I went searching for the writings of Akigatsu Sensei, and I found this book, Shadow Buddha in English. It was hard to find, but I got it. The Shadow Buddha book seems to me put your father and then you into beautiful Dharma lineage with Akigatsu Sensei. Not alike, but aligned. And in my opinion, that's a wonderful place to be. And so forth. Thank you for writing Bright Dawn. It's just the kind of thing that an ordinary blue-collar guy like me likes to read when we read at all. Just thought I'd share this with you. Don't know why. And I thought, gee, I have to mention this because he's talking about Akigatsu Sensei, and not because of his Memorial Day, but somehow it's just a coincidence. The universe has these converging lines, you know. But right at the time, when I read it, I said, gee, I don't remember exactly what was on what page 124. So I reached to grab the book, and it's about where I quote the shout. This is where we went, you know, my book, of course, is about the lakefront walk, and we walk to Inspiration Point to see the sunrise, and sometimes when we took groups there on a walk, and morning walk, and then we did a shout. Sometimes we threw rocks or memorial stones or gratitude offerings or into the Lake Michigan there, and sometimes we shouted. What did we shout? We shouted a code phrase, what we call a code phrase in our lay program, or we called our favorite teaching, our favorite phrase, our favorite word. Some people shouted, live life with no regret. I remember my niece. Some shouted, live your true life. Be true to yourself. And on page 124, the shout, which is in the back cover of the Shadow Buddha book, translation of Akigatsu Sensei's writings, some of his writings later in life. You know, you look at some writings of some person, not necessarily that the later parts are more true or deeper or better than the earlier parts. They all have their own qualities because the person's life keeps going. And when you see an expression of somebody, it might be at an early time in his life, later time in his life. You can't say, that's him either. But he talks about the two languages, one's own and language for the other. The first is the shout. The second is just propaganda. You know, of course, one's tears and blood may be found in propaganda, but still, it's very different from the shout, which is entirely one's own language. That kind of a shout. He says, okay, he closes with this sentence. I want to hear words that are like sparks from a red-hot iron pounded by a hammer, or like drops of blood, or a stream of tears. Wow, that's powerful, you know. We want to live like that. What's your shout? We might reflect on it, but when a shout happens, it cannot be premeditated. We can't be conscious that we're shouting. It happens. When keep going happened to me initially, yeah, it happened. I said, hey, then I reflected upon it and grabbed it. And it kept going like a character in a novel. It got its own life and took off, or as I say, got legs. And took me and is taking me many places. And the lay ministers, through their sharing and reflections, are helping that process too. Then I think one's whole life becomes a shout. Huh? I like that, you know? I think when there's no self-consciousness and there's no concern about what others might think or judge or blame or anything, you know, it's going beyond. What's beyond mean? Beyond the relative world. How to live an absolute life in the relative world. How to be in the world but not of the world. All these things, you know. It's you, yet it's not your doing. You know, what is you? Okay? Is it your individual life? But you is also universal life. You got the wave, the water, the ocean. The wave is separate from the ocean, different, but it's the same. Same water. All kinds of analogies so that we don't get caught by our conclusions. Huh? George Inouye, one of my strong Dharma friends, passed away now. Makes his teachings even more powerful, but his code phrase was, don't conclude. Very blunt, very simple, very pithy. Don't conclude. We have to put on the explanations and expand on that. But as I can put it into my keep going now, I see the same, touching the same truth there. Well, let me close by saying I'm thinking of G.T. Suzuki's attributed to him, his phrase. He said, there are three conditions or traits that, you know, you have to be in order to successfully walk the path. The first trait is sincerity. The second trait is sincerity. And the third trait is sincerity. So, that's all for today's broadcast. And you have a beautiful Sincerity Day. Thank you.